nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Okay, so we still have time, a little bit of time to go on. Now, with the lattice, we want to understand, okay, what holds a lattice together? You know, why it doesn't kind of collapse? It doesn't also doesn't evaporate away at a certain temperature, right? Of course, if you heat the lattice or crystal to high temperature, eventually it's going to melt. But at a certain temperature, the lattice structure holds at a certain lattice constant and a certain structure for a reason. That's the crystal binding, which is, can be described by atomic potentials, or sometimes, depending on which community you're, it can also be called force fields, right? Especially for organic or organic materials. Okay. So the reading, you can read Kitao's book from 54 to 79 pages. So we're going fairly quickly, because this is a kind of like a review, of the lattice structure. And it's easy to read, actually. Kitao's book is pretty friendly, for self-learning even. So please, read these chapters if this is really your first time to encounter these concepts. All right. So, the chemical bonds are, the reason that, holds a lattice kind of together. And, so for any pair of atoms, there is always some interaction. Okay. It can be a bonding interaction. Bonding means that usually means the interaction is fairly strong, right? Ionic bonds, covalent bonds, like metallic bonds, hydrogen bond, okay? Or it can be a non-bonding interaction, okay? Especially the well-known non-bonding interaction is a van der Waals interaction, right? There's also Coulomb interaction, okay? Coulomb interaction is basically electrostatic forces between positive and negative charges, right? So Coulomb interaction is always there for ionic crystals. So they have positive and negative charges. And for silicon, there is no Coulomb interaction because every atom is a neutral, right? You don't have any cations or anions there. Okay. So for a pair of atoms, we can describe the bonding energy using the symbol U, right? So U is energy released by the atomic pair when separating to infinite distance. So this is, the conventional definition for the energy. We use infinite far as a reference, right? You can have a different definition. You can define the potential energy at a certain separation as a zero, okay? So the most conventional way is that, you assume that when the two atoms are really far away, there's no interaction, then the binding energy is zero. Okay? So, then I might have a question for you for any bonded atom in real material, would the energy be above zero or be below zero? Okay? Let's just think about sodium chloride, right? Sodium chloride, if we bring one sodium ion and chlorine ion infinitely far away, it's gonna be zero, right? We define that as zero. So when we bring them closer to the distance, the same as the real distance in a lattice, what would be that energy? Is it negative or positive? It's negative, right? It's negative. Actually, it is required because, if it's higher than zero, then, any material will always try to achieve the minimum energy, right? It will always push it away. So, which means that, the material won't be stable if you get a higher energy than the infinite separation, all right? So the energy for a real pair always be lower than the energy when they are infinitely far away, okay, to be stable, all right? So, another convention we have is that the energy is equally shared between the two atoms, right? So if the U as a function of the distance, and then So this is potential energy, right? Then we say that each atom has half of that energy. Okay. So now we can look at the van der Waals interaction. Van der Waals interaction is a weak interaction, right? So the examples we have are inert gases, argon, for example. It can be molecular crystals, right? Molecular crystals in some polymers, say. So between each molecule, the interaction is very, very weak, is van der Waals. So, but van der Waals, it's a, to be stable, it has a both attraction and repulsion component, right? So, the attraction is due to the dipole-dipole interaction at a very long distance. And repulsion is due to Pauli exclusion principle. It acts at the shorter distance, okay? So how does, attraction, work? You know, we can look at this pair. Now, this pair are initially pretty far away. If we bring them closer, there's going to be induction of the charges. So it turns out that, there are going to be some negative and positive at the nearest end. Okay. They tend to attract to each other. And, on the far end, you also get the positive and negative. Okay. And they're also attraction. But then, if you look at both left ends, there's going to be some repulsion. The right ends of both atoms, there's going to be some repulsion as well. So, these interactions, they are, the attraction and repulsion, they are of different sign. And when you take the net, it's going to be really big small, right? It's not going to be totally balanced because the distance of these opposite sign charges is small and these are large, and then the same sign of charges, the distance are the same, but it's in the middle, okay? It's because the distance is in the denominator when you calculate the force, so the force will not be totally balanced. So that's why you may ask, both argon atoms are neutral, right? Why there is still some attraction force? Okay, this is due to this little induction of the charges when you put them bring them relatively close. Right, so that's the attraction due to the van der Waals, due to dipole-dipole interaction. Okay, now if you bring them really close, the repulsion is going to take over, but it's due to a different mechanism. It's a Pauli exclusion. Now the electron clouds start to overlap each other, but the quantum theory tells us that each orbital can mostly hold two electrons, right? If you then bring them too close enough, then these electrons will compete for the space. So they start to repel each other, right? Okay. So this is due to the overlap of electron wave function, or you can say electron cloud, right? And this repulsion is very strong. It goes up steeply with the distance, right? And we can look at, the curve to describe that. All right. So the most kind of a common functional form to describe the van der Waals interaction is a Nernard-Jones potential, right? You can see the UR is 4 epsilon times sigma over R to the 12th power minus sigma over R to the 6th power. Okay. So the first one has a positive sign, which is a repulsive interaction. Now the second term is attractive, right? So the repulsive is 12th power. You know, the exponent is large, which means it's a short range interaction. It changes quickly with the distance r. Okay, the second term is to the 6th power is still pretty high power, but is less than the repulsive. So this, the change of this term as a function of the distance will be relatively more slowly. Okay. So the numbers in this function for argon, okay, the sigma is 3.4 angstrom, and epsilon is 0.01042 eV. So the sigma characterizes the bonding energy, which is the prettiest weak, only on the order of 0.01 eV, as you see, okay? So now, if you plug in the numbers and start to plot this Nielandro-Ohm's potential as a function of the distance, you will find out that when your R is larger than the sigma, your potential energy will be smaller than zero. Okay, when your R becomes smaller than the sigma, then this potential energy becomes positive. Okay, as we said, the positive is not stable; it's always trying to push to the equilibrium position. Right. And where is the equilibrium position? Equilibrium position is when the R is 1.12 sigma, right? 1.12 sigma, your minimum energy is minus epsilon, okay? So that's how this function will look like when you plot as a function of the sigma. And this plot as plotted as R over sigma is on the reduced units. So you can see the minimum does happen at 1.12 sigma. And it stays negative. Right, you can imagine that. What about when we increase R to be infinitely large? What do you expect U to be? It becomes zero, right? We gradually approach zero, right? When R is really large, you can tell from that form, okay? Which means that if the two atoms are initially very very far away, the force is so weak, so it's not enough to really pull them. But if you start to bring them close enough, the attraction force is gonna bring them closer. Okay, till this point, it will reach the minimum. So it will stay there eventually. That's how the argon solid will become a solid at a certain temperature. Okay. And if you try to press it, right? Why? So we know the bulk modulus is a quantity describing how hard the material is, which means that beyond this point, beyond the natural state, if you want to press the material so that the bond length becomes smaller, the energy shoot up quickly, right? So that's why usually a lot of materials are hard to press, hard to compress, all right? So that's because passing this point, the Pauli exclusion principle starts to take over. I mean, the electron clouds start to overlap. And it doesn't allow you to do that. And you need to consume a lot of energy, like diamond. Diamond is a covalent bonding. So the bond is much stronger than this one. So argon is bonding is not so strong. So it's kind of easier to compress. Anyway, so the bond energy is 0.01 EV, is pretty weak. So you can see it's hard to compress, right? But it's not hard to break down the material, to evaporate, or to melt it, because in order to melt your material, you need to bring the atoms farther away, and in order to even evaporate the atom, then you bring atoms to infinitely far, right? That's the energy you need. You need the potential well. That's only 0.01 EV energy per atom you need to evaporate. So that's why argon, for example, has a very, very low melting point and the evaporation point, right? The bond is weak, is easy to break, okay? Okay, so we can still calculate how much energy we need to totally break down the material, from a crystal totally down to each individual atom. So the total energy stored in the material, then it's called the cohesive energy. All right, cohesive energy is the potential energy of all atoms in a crystal, or the energy you need to break down into individual atoms. Right. So in order to do this calculation, we can let's consider a face center cubic argon lattice with n atoms. N is usually a very, very large number. Okay, it's an FCC crystal. So you just sum up the potential energy contained by each atom. Okay, so this energy is equal to, now we use a half before that because each atom will share half of the bonding energy, right? So we put a half in front of this summation. So 4 sigma is, 4 epsilon is still there, and now, then we sum up these terms. So we can, for each I, let me see. Yeah, for each I, we swipe through J. J can be 1 to N, but J is not the same as I. We don't sort of sum up any energy associated with itself, right? We have to look at another atom. Okay. Now, because in the system, the atoms can have different distances, right? We may look at the pair who are nearest neighbors. Then there's another pair who are second nearest neighbor, right? They also still have energy, right? When we look at one atom, then we need to sum up all the energies associated with all its neighbors, no matter it's the nearest neighbor or second nearest neighbor, and so on. Okay? So to represent that distance, we unify a term we call PIJR. Okay? What does this term mean? So this is the distance between atom I and atom J, okay? All expressed in terms of the nearest neighbor distance R, okay? So for a nearest neighbor, PIJ will just be 1. And for the second nearest neighbor and the further neighbors, this PIJ will be larger than 1. So this is a compact form. We can write a total energy. Okay? So, yeah. So this is actually the energy for one atom I. If we look at I, then we sum out on J, right? And the cosine energy for this N atom crystal, now we just multiply by N, right? Because eventually each atom will be equivalent in terms of how much energy it has, right? It's a single element crystal, so we multiply N in front of this formula, okay? Now, there's a little bit tricky to do the summation. For the FCC crystals, again, we're still viewing from just one atom, right, and try to figure out how much energy processed by that one atom. Okay, so we need to sum up the first and nearest neighbors. Okay, so the PIJ is on the denominator, as we see from the previous one. So what are just the P terms summing up together? Okay, so the PIJ to the 12 minus 12th term, summing up all the nearest neighbors and the 6 second nearest neighbors, and so on. Okay. So if we truncate at the second nearest neighbor, just only the nearest neighbor and second nearest neighbor. And so it turns out to be this term would be 12 point something. Okay. A little bit larger than 12, actually. So this 0.13 comes from the second nearest neighbor. Now, this tells you that, for this minus 12, for the, repulsion term, the impact really comes from the 12 nearest neighbors, right? All the rest, second nearest neighbors only contribute, 0.13 as compared to 12 point something, okay? Because this is a really short range, remember, right? The first term, 12's power, is an extremely short range. But the minus 6 term is a little bit different. So you see that, again, the nearest neighbors will contribute 12 to it, and the second nearest neighbor would contribute 2 point something to it, so that now this term, the total is 14 point something, right? Which means that for this attraction term, the second nearest neighbors cannot be neglected, okay? They still contribute considerably to the total energy eventually. Okay? So, that's a summation. And if we want to calculate the last constant eventually, because the original R, that's the only distance between one pair, right? Now, in a crystal, the minimum distance can be different from just one pair. Okay? So find out the lattice constant. We take the derivative of total energy with dr that needs to be equal to 0. So plug in these numbers, and eventually for FCC crystal, the R0 equal to 1.09 sigma. Okay? 1.09 sigma. At that position, this is the total energy. So one interesting finding is that now the equilibrium distance in a crystal is 1.09, right? Do you remember the equilibrium distance for just one pair of atoms earlier we find? What's that number? 1.12, right? So 1.12, if you have only two argon atoms, you put them together, the equilibrium will be 1.12 sigma. But now, if you put infinite number of argon atoms to form a real crystal, it's kind of the atoms are pushed closer a little bit, right? The distance now becomes 1.09, okay? So I think we're out of time, but please think about this. Why, in a crystal, the distance between argon atoms is shorter than you have only one pair there, okay? It's an interesting thing to think about, all right? Okay, so much for today. Thank you very much.